Good morning, and welcome back to your morning conversation here on KXCV KRNW. I'm Jeremy Werner. Joining me this morning is State Representative Rusty Black, who represents Missouri's 7th District, which covers cities like Trenton, Chillicothe, and Brookfield. Rusty, thank you for joining me this morning. This year's legislative session wrapped up just last Friday, and a lot of critics and observers have said that the 2022 legislative session in Missouri was marked by a lot of infighting, as well as a low number of bills that have been passed. But, you know, I don't want you to respond to the critics. I'm curious, from your point of view, what is your takeaway from this session?
My takeaway was most of the priorities that I had there, doesn't mean that I'm the one that passed them, but things that I thought we should get accomplished were accomplished. The only disappointing thing, I'm one of the people, and I have constituents that contact me about trying to make some reforms to our initiative petition process in our state. And I was hoping that would, some kind of reforms that were negotiated would pass, and that did not pass. But the work that we did on the budget, I think, is good. It's not ending because we have so much money coming in from the federal level. Plus, many people may not realize that we haven't started budgeting the infrastructure bill that was passed by the federal government. And if I remember the dollar amount right, that's around $8 billion. And that will be an ongoing process, I believe, for 3 or 4 years as we work through those dollars. There were positive things done for education, rural education, as well as education of all students in our state. So overall, I think that was good. And the fact that some things didn't pass, they didn't pass probably for a reason. And they need to have more negotiation on those. So although there's disappointments, and you highlighted that, you know, people want to get on the radio and get on TV and point to big things, well, on the whole, we ended up getting some positive things done, and that's my takeaway from this legislative session.
So when it comes to bills that you co-sponsored this year, I mean, whether or not they passed or not even, you know, what are some of the bills that you're proud of?
Well, yeah, there's a couple bills that I were bills that I filed that did make it through the end of our process. Of course, we haven't made the point where the governor signs those or not. But the bill that touches the most constituents in the state of Missouri, the No Patient Left Alone or Compassionate Caregiver bill, that was a bill that I wrote. And when I say I, you know, with work and help of other people, there ended up being 4 representatives, those of us working together to get something finished at the end. And I'm very happy with that end product. It wasn't what we started with, but it was negotiated to, again, good end for patients and for families, so that if number one, even in today's status, not where we live at, I don't think, but there are places where there's still some pretty strict restrictions on people visiting loved ones in long-term care as well as hospitals. And this bill takes care or offers an opportunity, if the governor signs it, for there to be a compassionate caregiver, be able to be with somebody up to 24 hours a day. At the same time, we did need to make sure that hospitals, long-term care, hospice facilities didn't take a risk of losing federal dollars coming into those facilities. They need Medicare and Medicaid dollars. And the language in the bill at the end helps protect, I believe, those facilities to not lose those dollars, but at the same time, allowing compassionate caregivers to go in, even in times of emergencies that we went through. And that was an important negotiation at the end of the bill. It may not be what everybody wants that's listening, but it will no longer be a lockout. There's a couple of short-term times in which facilities could keep somebody from going in, but at the end of 7 days, then they go through the process and people could get in to visit their loved ones. So that was a major thing. It was House Bill 2116 that I sponsored that's going to governor's desk, and the same compromise language ended up on 2 other bills. So I'm relatively confident one way or another the governor will end up signing that bill. The second thing that I've worked on, a lot of things I do deals with education. I was an ag teacher for 33 years, been part of the education, I guess, business throughout Northwest Missouri at Nottoway Holt and at Chillicothe and from King City. Today, trying to get people to stay in education is a problem. Part of that's money. Part of it's the rhetoric that we hear. There's something called Career Ladder. It's current law in our state. I passed a statutory change to that law. It didn't totally change it, but it changed it to where people could apply for Career Ladder stipend earlier. And it's a merit-based system. A teacher puts in a little bit more effort, clocks that effort, and then at the end of the year can get what I would call a bonus check. That may not be the right way to discuss it, but myself as an instructor, I participated in that program until the program went away. And not only did we get the statutory change that I think the governor, hope the governor will sign into law, but we also refunded that program. We put $37 million in the budget. The estimate was that it would take $20, $25 million to restart it. We add a little bit more money in case more people, more schools decide to jump onto that program, because those dollars could actually start physically going out the door at the end of the upcoming school year. I have some bills that deal with the teacher pension system to try to get it where retired teachers can come in and fill holes. Representing the 7th District, I have 13 schools in my district. And everybody is begging to find somebody to go in the classroom. Well, we may have to get some retired instructors back, and there were a couple things that did not pass. But as you said, the conversation's ongoing, and hopefully the next year I can get that accomplished.
All right, so I'm actually really glad you brought both of those up, and I'll go ahead and go back to the Compassionate Care Visitation Act. Not only because you sponsored it and talked about it on the House floor last week, but if I'm remembering correctly from previous conversations we've had over the years, one of your children is in the healthcare system, correct?
My daughter is a nurse practitioner, and she works in emergency room, in emergency hospital, and that's where she spent a lot of her life, either as a nurse. It's been critical care she was a PICU nurse that traveled around the United States. And then when she decided to move back to Missouri, she worked the emergency room at MU Hospital.
Okay.
And now over in at Blessing Hospital in Quincy, Illinois, right now working the emergency room.
Okay, so how much of her experiences during the pandemic are things that, you know, you discussed with your daughter during the pandemic? You know, how much of that was factored into the Compassionate Care Visitation Act?
Well, as far as writing it, I use the Arkansas and Oklahoma bill as kind of a template. A lady, the speaker's office, and I talked back late summer last year about me trying to file a bill that would work and that could pass the legislature in 1 year, not take 3 or 4 years. So my daughter's experience helped me more with the debate and working with different partners. You know, the original bill, Missouri Hospital Association, which are the hospitals, didn't like all of it because it opened the gates probably too far in their mind. There were people in long-term care facilities as well, and I have students that now manage long-term care. There's two very good students over here that they're not students anymore. Of course, they're older, they're adults. But my experience in talking with them helped me craft a bill that I think negotiate a bill that protects patients and protects families, but at the same time protects those people working. There was one pretty heavy discussion one time about maybe taking out the part where a hospital could force a belligerent Rusty Black out of the hospital. Well, because people were scared that they would be able to force an unbelligerent Rusty Black out of the hospital. Well, that my daughter's work in an emergency room situation and dealing with people, and sometimes people not very good to deal with, there was no way I was going to take that right away from a hospital and staff to not be able to force somebody that's being a total pain and being dangerous to staff out of the hospital. My daughter's got enough stuff to worry about trying to save somebody, let alone somebody trying to break down the door and get in there after. So those kind of experiences. And that's an extreme one, but that was one of them that we discussed. You know, and at the same time, my daughter believes that having family members around, having help in the hospital is helpful for people to recover. Those discussions were also discussed. I have a mother-in-law that spent 11 days in the hospital without anybody during the COVID time, and that was fairly difficult. And we were fortunate enough, it was someplace that we knew somebody working there, and it made our experience better than others.
All right, so the other thing you mentioned was education, specifically teacher salaries. And correct me if I'm wrong on the summarization of this legislation when it comes to teacher salary increases. If a teacher is wanting an increase in their salary in Missouri, they will need to make a request for this raise, so it's voluntary, and it'll also require a local match, correct?
That is true. The proposal that you're talking about that was funded through the budget, the idea was to get minimum teacher salary to $38,000 in our state. And where I live at, rural North Missouri, there are schools that are well below that. You know, if we go to the suburban urban areas, there's that funding's not probably going to help very many. I'm not going to say none, but not very many. They're already at that level. This proposal was put out by the governor's office that raised the salary $38,000. If a local school district determined that they wanted to participate in that, they would need to fund, the local school district would need to fund 30% of the dollars needed to raise their staff members to that $38,000 minimum. And then the state would contribute 70% of that. It was one-time funding. You know, it's not, when I say a core item, that's something that's in the budget year after year after year. And this was proposed as a one-time funding source, which probably is going to cause pause to school board members and superintendents. But I'm also working with the department, and not just myself, other people are. There are school districts reached out to me and say, hey, if we go all the way to $38,000, the compression that's going to cause with people that have been there 10 years, et cetera, is going to be extreme. And we're not going to be able to fund the amount on the salary schedule, the teachers above that salary schedule, to give them an equal raise or even a raise close to that dollar amount. So there is discussion going on. What if a school district wants to go from maybe they're at 31 now to 34, can they still access that 70%? And that would allow them to move everybody up the scale maybe a little bit better, et cetera. And I don't know what the end result's going to be. There's been no, to my knowledge, there's not been anything come out from Department of Elementary Secondary Education to superintendents that tell them what the rules are going to be around these dollars. And I may have made it complicated, but it's important for people listening to know, teachers to know, is a one-time funding source. And the fact at this point in time, nobody knows whether does a school district have to go to 38 or can they access these funds if they give a $3,000 or $4,000 raise and help stop some of the compression for some of the staff that have been there for a longer period of time.
And this is something the governor has talked about all year. He mentioned in the State of the State address, and other lawmakers have also talked about this and have said they wanted it throughout this year. So, you know, in general, are you pleased with the outcome or were you wanting a different solution?
Well, I don't, using the word solution, I don't know. It's one of the one piece that can make a difference with our teacher shortage. But we know it's taken a while for us to get here. There's a lot of things involved with that. It's going to take a while to fix it. Anytime you increase pay, I think that that's possible to help with that. There's one thing that I'm a little bit concerned about with this. This was a proposal from the governor's office. I do support the governor and the idea behind it. The governor had asked the education community 3 years ago to come up with a plan, or 2 years ago. And to my knowledge, nothing has come up. I do know some groups, we'll talk about Career Ladder later, have put that in front of the governor. But this was a plan to try to raise everybody. But at the same time, the State School Board Association has put together a committee
the study teacher salaries in our state and to try to see if there's something that we can do statewide that helps and deals with the compression issue, et cetera. My greatest concern, Jeremy, is that this committee will come back with a plan completely different than this 38,000 that we started this year. And then how do we try to get people to support that? If it hurts the $38,000 plan, there's going to be a bunch of upset people. The $38,000 plan has caused compression problems within school districts if we use only that source. So I guess I'm being a good politician. I don't have the answer on this part of the issue, but I do believe that in two or three years, we're going to head some direction with a good plan that everybody can support. I just hope in the meantime that we don't end up causing more harm than good. The career ladder part, are you going to ask about it? Because it does help for those teachers that have been in the system for a longer period of time. It will help increase their pay, okay, if school districts decide to jump on that. And the bill that was passed, and I believe the governor will sign my statutory changes, changes that to where now it's a 40% match from local school districts, where in prior years it was a 60% match. So it flips that, 40% local, 60% state. And another important component of that, so many teachers are teaching 1 or 2 years, or this is what I get told by administrators, are teaching 1, 2 years and then jumping out. Well, this stipend will allow them to become part of it during their third year. So at the end of their second year, they can apply. And at the conclusion of their third year, if they've met whatever goals they put on their career ed plan, then they're going to be able to receive that stipend. And as somebody that received those, I think that will be a benefit. That'll be another carrot that it's not going to fix everything, but it's going to be one of those things that make a positive impact on the classroom and keeping qualified teachers in it.
Another piece to education I wanted to ask about, I'm sure you can guess why, but it involves the governor and the St. Louis Dispatch. Last year, the newspaper found several educators' social security numbers on the state education website, basically finding that it was publicly viewable to everyone. Was there any discussion amongst lawmakers about the governor's reaction or how he handled it? Because my understanding is the Department of Education's website is maintained by Parsons Office of Administration. And on top of that, from your viewpoint in general, do you believe the problem has been fixed and that the fix will make sure this doesn't happen again?
Okay. Yes, certainly that was discussed. Not so much Parsons handling or the department's handling, but there have been various breaches in different systems within the state. When I say that, I've had two letters, one from the department and then one from another system that I'm part of. And it's not government, but it's pseudo-government. That is a strong discussion. Now, the one that is pseudo-government, which is just barely outside of government, they have a better budget to take care of those kind of things and keep their system updated. To be real honest, our state still has DOS operating system in places, which means there's not too many people even around anymore that can manage that system. So as that discussion made it to fruition and become a major discussion early in the session, the ARPA funds jump in. And what the governor's office, the Office of Administration, and I believe everyone, the departments are on the same page on this, is to spend some of those ARPA funds to help improve our operating systems in state government, allow them to talk better back and forth, and also be updated so the security updates can be so much easier to handle than what it is with systems that were designed 30 years ago, in some cases 40 years ago, Jeremy. So yes, it was major discussion. It may have been the last time it was in the press, which during the DESE problem
But we were discussing it to the very end in Budget Committee, and would these dollars help protect that? And the people that run that in our system believe that they will. So it is a major factor that people are concerned about, Department of Revenue, let alone employees with state government, and the information that could be breached.
Okay. Well, those are all the questions I have. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Well, I believe it's important for the people listening to try to find out the truth as close as you can, because sometimes social media posts don't exactly tell all the story as we're doing things. I get various emails that I really don't know where that information come from, but they're not very accurate. So reach out to your representatives, to your senator's office, and see if you can find out the latest, greatest information, not necessarily everything that you believe. Our budget is a pretty good example that I have throughout the year. I had people contacting me, why are the state paying for this? Why is the state paying for this? And sometimes it was federal government stuff that they got confused with our state of Missouri. So that's important. And if anybody does want to contact me, you can certainly call my office at the Capitol, and I'll get back a hold of you and answer any questions to the best of my ability.
All right. Thank you for joining me this morning. Once again, that is State Representative Rusty Black, who represents Missouri's 7th District. I'm Jeremy Werner, and this has been your morning conversation right here on KXCV KRNW.